You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 5, Episode 8. Well, hey, friends, and welcome to this week's episode of Feathers. I'm so happy to have you back. I want to start out this week's episode by thanking a few people. Tammy Walker, Jamie Trung, Jennifer Connell, and Melanie Dorsey. Thank you guys so much for sharing the episode from my Facebook page over at facebook.com/AmyJBennett. You can see all the episodes posted every week over there and share them from there. It really helps get the word out about these stories. They're just so amazing and I love to see them being shared. And so this week, I'm so excited to have Karen Eamon. Karen is the author of 10 books, including the New York Times bestseller, Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All. She's also a writer and speaker for Proverbs 31 Ministries and a writer for Encouragement Today, online devotions that reach more than 1 million women daily. Karen lives in central Michigan with her husband and 3 children. Karen has a new book out called Listen, Love, Repeat. It comes out November 15th, and I'm so excited to get the conversation started online about this book. It is so good. Our call from God, the highest call that we have is to love God and then to love others. And so this book is just chock full of stories and practical advice about how we can just listen to what people need and to walk in obedience as we love people. So I'm so excited for you to hear this. Here is my conversation with Karen. Well, hey, Karen, and welcome to Feathers today.
Hey, Amy, thanks for having me on.
Yes, I'm so glad that you're here today. How about you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your family and what you do?
I would love to. I am a speaker and a writer with Proverbs 31 Ministries. I live in Michigan, the middle of the mitten. I mean, you know, we are America's high five, the state of Michigan.
I haven't heard of that one before. I've heard the mitten, but not the high five.
Yeah. And I've lived here my whole life. I'm married to my college sweetheart, Todd. We've been married for 30 years this summer.
Congratulations.
And we have 3 children. Our oldest daughter lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. She owns her own salon. And then we have 2 boys that are out of high school, still living at home, going to college and trade school. They are 21 and 18. The 18-year-old just graduated, so no more babies in school. It's going to be a new season for me.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, you know, I'm just outside Charlotte, so I might need to get the details on the salon. I was just thinking, I need a haircut today.
There you go. Yep, well, I'll get you that.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so I am so excited to talk about your new book. It's called Listen, Love, and Repeat, Other-Centered Living in a Self-Centered World. And so in this podcast, we talk a lot about faith and obedience. And I, you know, if I'm reading it correctly, and I think I am, the book really centers around God's one another commands for us, how we love one another, encourage one another, admonish one another. And then really what that has looked like in your life and your experience, and then encouraging others on how to do that too. So I would love for you to start us out talking about really where you see in our selfie, you know, obsessed world, why you wrote your new book.
Well, that is a great question. I love to answer, because the short answer is because I saw my mom do it, and I also see my daughter doing it. And it was something I tried to do. But the longer answer is, I just feel like in our society, everything, like you just said, is about ourselves. We're taking pictures of ourselves, picture of our food. We're wondering, where's the next thing for me to do? And not that it's wrong to take selfies or pictures of your food. I've done that, and I still do it. But we sometimes get so caught up in ourselves that we forget that old-fashioned joy that comes from putting other people first. And I mentioned my mom. My mom and I could not be less alike when it comes to personality. She's very sweet and shy and quiet. I'm very loud and rambunctious. My daughter tends to roll a little bit like me. But I saw my mother just always put other people first. She would remember people's, not only their special occasion and their birthdays, but she would remember the anniversary of their loved one's death, and she would do something for them. She seemed to just be one of those people that just always thought of others. And I grew up seeing her do that and just kind of thought it was normal. I remember her telling me one time when we were talking about our life, because our life wasn't super easy. We were a single parent home, and my mom had to work and try to put food on the table. and she was going through a divorce that she did not ask for, and it was kind of a sticky and not so fun situation. But she didn't seem to get down on herself. And when I asked her one day, like, Mom, how do you just not get down in the dumps? And she said, you know what? No matter how bad you think you have it, there's someone else who's having a worse day than you or is in a worse off situation than you. Go find that person, do something for them. And then all of a sudden, it kind of lifts you out of the funk, you know, that blue funk you might be in because you're feeling sorry for yourself. And so I saw her do that with her personality. It was kind of quiet and shy way of doing it. But I learned that there is, in a weird way, a joy that comes from not getting your own way, from saying no after you. And you know, simple things like holding the door open for someone in public, it just putting others first, you think it would kind of not make your day because, hey, you've got your own things you want on your agenda. But in some strange way, when you put others first and make their day, it makes yours as well. And I've seen my daughter do this too. She kind of picked it up too. We all have different personalities. But yes, as you mentioned, those one another's of scripture, those simple back to basics, love one another, defer to one another, you know, all of those things, just dialing it back and doing those simple things, it can really be a way to see your life as a ministry.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think this book is almost, it's so very practical in all the different chapters. And I feel like it's like a manual, like hand to somebody that needs joy and who wants to live the Christian life and just be handed out to everybody. I think it's so great. And one of the people that I think about like this is Bob Goff, who wrote Love Does. Mm-hmm. And he is one of the most joyful people. Like, mm-hmm. It's exactly what you say. It's, you know, the more that you give yourself away, it somehow fills you up more. I think it's just that upside down kingdom that God
it
has.
It is. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And that's, I'm glad to hear you say you think it's practical, because that's what I set out to do, is just for that just average, ordinary person, which I totally am, you know, what are some practical, inexpensive, you know, might take a little of your time, but not too much of your time, just ways you can work in loving others into your normal daily days of life.
Yes. And one of the things that I love that you talk about, and I love how you name things, it's called heart drops. And this is a way to just stay open to what's going on and as you live your daily life. So talk to us about heart drops. And I would love for you to talk about your friend Tricia with the example with that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hearing a heart drop is actually a concept my husband and I learned from our small group leader, Michael. He's a wiser, older gentleman, and he talked to us about it one day, and I just could not get it out of my mind. Hearing a heart drop is just kind of learning to listen between the lines, where somebody says something without really saying it, or, you know, maybe they say something, but they don't elaborate, but it gives you a little hint into something you could do for them that might cheer them up, it might encourage them, it might just be, you know, a fun, reminiscent thing, which I'll tell in my story about Tricia. But it's just being attentive, living alert, not being so concerned when someone's talking with planning the next thing you're going to say. And I'm preaching to myself on that one because right. I do that. I'm not really listening. I'm thinking about the next thing I want to say, or I'm mentally making my shopping list in my mind. But really listening to them and listening between the lines, being prayerful, you know, is to, you know, just asking God, is there something here they're saying that I could, you know, pick up on and do something that'll encourage them and show them God's love? So my friend Tricia, the story with her, she and I went to the same church. Our boys played on the same baseball team, and we had lots of time to spend together talking. And one time when we were talking, we were discussing our children. We both had children with special needs. I have a son who is dyslexic, my 21-year-old son, and my husband is also dyslexic. And so I've dealt with a little bit of learning to read in our house because I was homeschooling him when he was younger, and it was kind of stressful. She had a son in the public school, and he had a different learning disability that special need, I should say, that was kind of stressing her out. And then she just made this real quick reference to, oh, yeah, I never liked to read either. I was never very good at it. And I said, oh, you weren't. And so I kind of thought, ooh, that's a heart drop. She's kind of some emotions coming into her voice when she's recalling not knowing how to read very well. And so she said, yeah, you know, I had to be in like a special reading group. I didn't like it because my other friends could read real fast and I couldn't. But, oh, I loved being at my grandma's house because my grandma had this one book. And so she started talking about this book, Mary Jane and the Indian Beads, and how it was a small little book, a chunky hardcover one way from, you know, back in the early 1900s. But she loved it because she could get it off of her grandma's shelf, curl up on her couch, and she could read the whole thing from front cover to back cover. And it made her feel good. Like she accomplished something. She could read a whole book too, like her friends at school could in their assigned reading at school, which she couldn't quite do yet because she was a little bit behind in and struggled a little bit with reading. So I went home from that conversation thinking, this is exactly what Michael's teaching us about these heart drops. I think that was a heart drop. So I wrote down in the back of my planner, or maybe I put it in my phone now. I can't remember exactly, but somehow I notated that she liked that book, the name of the book, and I knew her birthday was coming up in April. So I hopped on eBay and I looked for a copy of that book, and I was able to find it. It was from, again, like back in, I think, 1920 something. I don't have the book right in front of me, so I don't remember the copyright date, but someone was selling a vintage copy of it. So I got up late at night when the auction was going to go off, and I bid at the last minute and I won it. I wrapped it up. I took it over, gave it to her in her living room for her birthday, and she opened it and she just about burst into tears. And she said, "Oh my word, how did you know?" She had completely forgotten. She told me that cute little, story that took, kind of painful and kind of cute little story that took just a couple seconds about her struggle. But then the happy part about being able to read on her grandma's couch, she didn't even remember telling it to me. And it touched her so much that not only was I listening that day, which I don't always do because that's not something that comes easily to me, but that I cared enough for her to make note of it, take a little time to search for it, and surprise her on her birthday. That was the result of hearing a heart drop and what the response was. And they don't have to always be super elaborate about like that. It can just be, you take note of your friend's high maintenance coffee drink because you go out to coffee with her a lot and she always gives the same order. When you get to the car, write it down. Someday go get it and surprise her and take it to her desk at work or drop it by her house if she's someone who's home during the day. Just a little simple thing that says, "I was listening, I love you, and I care."
I love that. It's just so intentional, and I'm just imagining myself as a recipient of something like that, like how loved and how special you would feel. It's just fantastic. And you talk about in this chapter some very practical things. I love that you mentioned that you just take notes like in your phone. But even you go so far, in the best way possible, that you stalk their social media accounts even for obsessions that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really easy actually to do all this than it was in my mom's day and age. But just go to their social media and poke around and see, if they put a picture of something, say, this is my favorite candy bar ever, whatever, make note of it. And then someday do the same thing that I mentioned with the coffee, but do it with their favorite candy bar, or their favorite, smoothie drink, whatever it is, however they roll. It's pretty easy nowadays to get a hint into something someone might like as a small gift.
Well, I have to share this particular example because after reading this book, I started listening. And there is a person that helps my my only son at school. And I was talking to him, talking to her, and she actually is a new widow in the last 2 years. And we were sitting in the main office of the school. And I think it was the first day of school. I had to take my son's medicine to school, and we were talking, and I looked over, and there were flowers being delivered to the school. And I was like, "Oh, that's nice." And then you could tell she looked at it with like side eyes and kind of like, "Yeah, that must be nice." And I knew because she was a somewhat new widow that she probably hadn't received flowers. And I thought about this, and I came home and I said, "Honey, would it be okay if I sent flowers to her?" So he was like, "Of course, I love that idea." So I ordered flowers, and it was delivered to the school 2 days later, and she emailed me, and she's like, "I have not received flowers in so long." She's like, "Aww. You have no idea how much that meant to me." So it's already bearing fruit.
I love hearing stories like that. That's exactly why I wrote the book. That just made my whole day, Amy. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. So, and I think this really ties into the concept that you talk about is noticing the necessary people. And for me, she was one of the necessary people in my life. So I would love for you to talk about what that means to you and actually talk about Mr. Brown Day.
Yes, the necessary people are those people in our lives who help us get life done. They deliver our mail, they bag our groceries, they make our high maintenance coffee drink. All of those things, they might teach our children, just like you were saying, someone that helps your child at school. Those necessary people, if they weren't there, my goodness, it would make a whole lot more work for us, especially when you think of calling the man to repair your furnace. Well, if he wasn't there, you'd be having to be on YouTube and try to figure it out yourself, right? So we all in our family have been on the lookout for necessary people and what we can do for them. And it all started back when my children were very small. I had a baby, a toddler, and a kindergartner. My kids were quite little, and they absolutely loved our mailman, Mr. Brown, because he didn't just deliver the mail. He also delivered smiles. He was never too busy to talk with people. if he'd see a little boy in their baseball uniform, a little girl in their dance outfit or whatever, and whatever it was that the activity was they enjoyed, he would stop and talk to them. And when he saw them again a few days later, he'd say, how was the dance recital? Or, hey, how'd that ball game go? Did you win? And he was just never too busy to visit. Now, the only bad part about that was my mail didn't always come at the same time every day because he was busy visiting with the widow down the street because he knew she was lonely. He'd stop and talk on her porch. But we didn't mind getting our mail late because we loved having Mr. Brown for a mailman. So we were starting to teach our children this concept about the necessary people. And we asked them, you know, who is someone who's a necessary person and what could we do to show them God's love? And the two that could talk both said, Mr. Brown. So we came up with this idea to have Mr. Brown Day. So the kids and I, we went off to the dollar store and we bought a bunch of little things for him. We bought a squirt gun because toddler Mitchell, I guess he was more of a preschooler, he thought that would be good to ward off the dogs with on his paper or on his mail route. And, we got just a couple other little trinket things for them. They wanted to get a gift certificate to a restaurant so that he could take Mrs. Brown out for a fancy dinner. So we trekked off to the Dairy Queen, which is about the fanciest restaurant in our town at the time.
Hey, I would take it.
Yeah. And so we got that. And then we made cookies and lemonade and we got confetti and those party blowers. And we hid inside our front door and just waited. And he rounded the corner because we lived on the corner. And he started to come up our front walk, and we flung open the door, and we hopped out on the porch, and we threw confetti, and we blew the honkers, and we said, surprise, it's Mr. Brown, best mailman in town. It's officially Mr. Brown Day. And he did not know, like, he kind of took a couple steps back, and he said, what in the world? And then we just told him, we just said that we wanted to designate a special day for him because he is the faithful person who delivers our mail every day, and we so appreciate all the packages and the letters he brings and the smiles he brings. Don't always appreciate the bills, but we'll take the bills too. And that we just wanted to show him God's love that day. And so we had our cookies and lemonade and he went on his way. And I didn't really think much more about it until a little while later, I was out cleaning the fingerprints once again off my picture window for my kids and the neighborhood kids. And I heard the clip clap of Mr. Brown's shoes coming up the walk. And I turned around. It was a real sunny day, and he had on sunglasses. I'll never forget it. And I said, hey, Mr. Brown, how are you today? And he handed me the mail, and then he took off his sunglasses and kind of shook his head and looked at the ground. He dropped his head, and then he looked up, and he said, Karen, I am still not over Mr. Brown Day. And I kind of laughed, and I thought, oh, isn't that sweet? And then he said this. He said, do you know that I've been a mailman? I can already say it, Amy, without crying. Do you know that I've been a mailman in this town on this street for 33 years? And no one has ever done anything like what your family did for me. Thank you for Mr. Brown Day. You know, he said, sure, they remember me at Christmas and that's wonderful, but nobody's ever like interrupted their day on a random, you know, I don't know, Tuesday afternoon or whatever it was to say thank you. And, you know, don't think our family is so amazing because we did it. We had lived in that house for 8 years before we finally thought of the idea, but it was just, you know, stopping. It didn't take that long to do that. I mean, we ran around town for a half hour and, yeah, we baked cookies and made lemonade. Didn't take that long, but I ran into him not too long ago. That happened in, I'm going to say about the year 2000. So it's been at least 15 years. And I ran into him. He's now since retired. And he was close to retirement at that age, but he's still around and kicking. And he gave me a big hug in Walmart and said, I still remember Mr. Brown Day. And that's been, you know, a decade and a half ago that it happened. So stopping on a random day to do something special to let people know you appreciate them, these necessary people, it really makes their day. And it helps to spread God's love.
Yes, but I think in these moments, though, and I love that, but it's so hard, don't you think? I mean, you have to put your pride down a little bit. I mean, it costs a little time, but also you think, oh, you know, they're going to think I'm silly. They're not going to really like this. And it's you have to put yourself out there, but it's so worth it.
It is. It really is. And I try to think, too, and I'm not to interrupt you, but I try to think, too, you know, the golden rule. We all learn, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's like one of the first Bible verses we learn in Sunday school or, you know, when we first become a believer as we're an adult, one of the first ones we probably hear. But sometimes we don't really just take it down to its most simple meaning and think, if I were a mailman or a mailwoman, what would I want someone to do to me? So it's just kind of going back to that golden rule. Like I think of our UPS guy. He knows that whenever he delivers our packages, if garage door is open, he can go in the fridge and get something cold to drink. I've just told him that because I thought, you know, what if I was a UPS deliverer out on a hot day, muggy day in Michigan? I'd want something cold to drink. So it's just that real simple. Do unto others what you would have them do unto you. What would you want done if you were in their necessary person role in your life? When you think of it that way, it's kind of easy to come up with ideas.
Well, yes, and here's another example that how this book has affected me already. So I have a house cleaner, and I work full time, so it absolutely is necessary. She's a necessary person in my
absolutely.
Life. And usually, you know, I work from home most of the time, and so I'm usually on a call. And you know, I when she leaves, I usually hand her a check. Thank you. See you, you know, in 2 weeks. And this week, I was like, she's a necessary person. What can I do? And actually, one of your suggestions is to say more than just thank you. Like, say why. And she was kind of, when she was leaving, just, I think it was just yesterday, she was kind of wiping off my front table again, and I was handing her a check, and I was like, you know, thank you so much. You really make my life run so much more smoothly.
There you go. Perfect.
And she was like, oh, she's like, I'm so glad to hear you say that. You know, and she was just so thankful that she could see that it was just not something on a checklist. It really meant something to my life, and it absolutely does. Like, her cleaning my house is so important to our family.
That is perfect. That's exactly what I mean. Thank you. Why? Don't just say thank you. Thank you. Why? That's wonderful. I love that story.
Yes. But sometimes loving people is not so easy, and you call them porcupines. How to hug a porcupine and squeeze a skunk. So
yeah.
Tell us about those people.
Yes. You know, when we're talking about all these creative ideas for love and people in your life, it's easy to love the necessary people because they help us. It's easy to love the people that are easy to love. They're our friends or, you know, somebody that we enjoy spending time with. But it's harder when those people, they're not maybe at the top of our list of most favorite people in our lives. And so when I talk about the concept of learning how to hug a porcupine and squeeze a skunk, which I talk about in the book and in the curriculum for the Bible study that is the companion to the book, I like to think of these two categories of people as those porcupines. They're the people in your life, they don't want your hug. It's not that they're mean or they're nasty or they're combative toward you or they don't like you. It's just they're just a little harder to get to know. They don't want your hug. They're just kind of cold and maybe a little distant or maybe they're a little awkward. But they don't really have their arms waiting and say, oh, give me that hug, give me that hug. And then squeezing a skunk, those are the people that if we were all honest, we would prefer not to be around. Maybe it's the combative uncle who constantly ridicules you for your faith. Or maybe it's somebody on a committee at church or at work that they're just kind of cantankerous. You just don't really like to be around them. And so if you're going to choose to spend an afternoon with someone, they wouldn't be on the top of your list. But I don't think, I mean, unless there's something wrong in my Bible, I have never seen a footnote that says love one another, defer to one another, you know, show grace with one another. And then there's a star that says accept those people you really don't like. Mm-hmm. I don't find that footnote. So I wish it were there. But since it's not, I have to tell myself that doing these little things and showing love and kindness to people, it's not just the people for whom it's easy for me to love. It's those porcupines that are a little prickly, little standoffish, and it's those skunks that, I'm sorry, they just plain stink. I prefer not to be around them. So that's the whole concept of hugging a porcupine and squeezing a skunk.
Yes, and I love the example that you gave of the boy at school, John.
Yes, big bad John. Yes, he was a student. It's probably too long a story to tell the whole thing, but basically I was a substitute teacher. There was a boy at the middle school. His name was John. They called him Big Bad John, and then they used his last name, but I don't use his last name, obviously. And he had never successfully stayed even 1 hour with a substitute teacher. I don't think he'd ever even stayed for more than probably 15 minutes. And so the day I had to teach a class where he was going to be in the third hour, the principal came down and said, hey, you know, just send so-and-so, John so-and-so, down to the office because he's never successfully ever stayed with a sub. He'll just make you look stupid. He'll taunt the other students. And I want to spare you that, so just send him down to the office. Well, I'm up for a good challenge. I like to learn how to squeeze a skunk. And I really, the more I learned about him, because my husband also spent some time at the school as a youth pastor, I knew exactly who he was talking about. And I had learned about him and his background and what was going on in his life. And he needed some love. He didn't need to be sent to the office. So I tried my best to greet him and say, he said, "Oh, you've probably heard of me. You know, Principal Pard told you to send me to the office." I said, "No, I heard about you and I heard you're a great kid. You want to pass out these papers?" And I just, the whole hour, I tried to show him love. And sometimes he acted up and I kept loving him and he'd act up again and I kept loving him. And at one point I went over and I squatted down. And I said, "Look, John, I know you have a reputation for never being able to stay with a sub, but I say you and I prove the principal wrong today. I know there's a good kid in there waiting to come out and I would love for him to come out today and be friends with me." And he looked at me like I had three heads. He was like, "What? Who told you I was a good kid?" And then he put two and two together, realized my husband was the guy that hung out in the lunchroom. And he actually, by the last 15 minutes of the class, he actually behaved and watched the movie we were watching. And I got a standing ovation in the office that day, which was actually a standing ovation for Jesus. When I went down there at the end of that period, it was lunchtime, and the principal wondered why in the world I hadn't sent him down there. But I said, "You know, I think he just needs somebody to pay attention to him. I think he's got a rough life." And when I would see him around town after that, he'd always wave like crazy and say, "Hey, lady, hi, lady." And he did fine every time I ever had him in class before, because he was living up to that reputation of being Big Bad John, the rough guy. And I knew inside he was a hurting teenager. He just needed somebody to show him a little bit of love that day. And it was all because of Christ that I was able to make it through that hour, because it was rough. But, you know, I wonder how many other, you know, icy cold hearts would be melted by a little dose of undeserving love.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's all about. I love this quote that you have in the chapter around scatter kindness. And it says, "What's the whole point of us being kind, especially to those who might be different from us or even difficult to love? I believe it is this: because our kindness can be a conduit to help others to discover God's grace and accept his salvation."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is so true. And that's what happened in my life. You know, someone was kind to me. They let me into their life. They listened to my heart drops and loved me, even though I wasn't necessarily prickly or a skunk. But I, you know, I was a latchkey kid from a single parent home who just wanted to hang out somewhere because my home was empty. My mom was working full time to put food on the table. My brother had a job from the time he was 12, and my house was empty. So I wandered across the street to the pastor's wife's house, and she just folded me right into her family. And so that's what I like to try to do to people today.
Mm-hmm. I love this. So it gives you joy. It gives God glory. It softens people's hearts towards God. I think it's just a win-win-win situation.
It is. But it's hard. Because
it is hard.
In order to do it, we have to put others first. We have to drop our agenda. We have to, you know, spend some time when we'd like to be doing something for ourselves, to do something for someone else. Not that I think you should never take time for yourself. As the minute we hang up, my friend and I are going out to lunch. Haven't done that in a long time with someone, but I'm going to take some time for myself to just be with a girlfriend. I'm not saying that you never do anything for yourself and you only think about other people all day long, but it's that attitude of prayerfulness in the morning that says, "Lord, please show me when the Holy Spirit is tapping on my heart, telling me to pay attention. Help me to live alert and come up with what it is you would have me to do for the day. Here's my agenda. I'm hoping to get it done. But I'm going to look at those interruptions, be they of the people sort, which is sometimes the hardest interruption in our day. I'm going to look at them as my marching orders from you today. Because I thought these were the things I was supposed to do. I got it written down right here. Please help me to get these done. If it's on your agenda too, but if there's something else, help me to just pause and not freak out and to just listen and to love that person."
Mm-hmm. And how important, as we talk about in this podcast, to actually obey. Because like when we have these, mm-hmm. you know, these drops and, well, heart drops, we're listening to the heart drops, and then the Holy Spirit, you know, suggests that we do something. If we don't do it, it's just kind of, you know, we have good intentions.
And well, exactly. And you hear that phrase, "Well, it's the thought that counts." Well, it is. It is the thought that counts. But how will that other person ever know that you're thinking of them if you don't say something? And sometimes, you know what? I don't ever want to look like I'm just this amazing person that does all this stuff for people. There are a lot of times I've blown it. I talk about sometimes I've blown it in the book. But sometimes it's just simply texting. Like I just texted someone the other day, and it was the anniversary of someone in their life passing away. And I fully intended to do something for them that week. I didn't. I didn't get around to it. There wasn't time in my agenda. Or I didn't make time in my schedule. But I texted them. I said, "Hey, I know that this is the week that your mom passed away. I just wanted to let you know I've been thinking about you," because I had been. "I've been praying for you," because I have been. "I didn't get around to doing the idea I wanted to." She didn't need to know that, but I just sent that simple text. And she texted me back and said, "That means so much to me." So it is the thought that counts, but you need to let them know you had the thought, if that makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I just, like I said, I love this book, and I think it's just so practical, and it's one that people can keep on their shelves and just keep going back to for ideas and get inspired to kind of live this sort of mindset of loving other people. So you mentioned, I think I heard you mention a Bible study, so tell us about that and where we can go find all this.
Yes. So the book's called Listen, Love, Repeat, and the Bible study is also called Listen, Love, Repeat. It's a six-week DVD session of me teaching. There's actually 7 weeks in the series because there's a seventh session where you come back together to do some of these fun things. I'll let them see that when they get it. But it's also by the same company. It's by Zondervan. They're not sold together. You buy them separately because, of course, you could just read the book and get things out of that, get ideas, lots of ideas. But if you want to study it either on your own or with a group of girlfriends or your Bible study at church, then you can get the DVD. And then there's also a Bible study guide that goes with it. It doesn't have a ton of homework every day. I know people sometimes think, oh, I'd love to be in a Bible study, but I can't do a whole hour and a half of homework a day. You can probably complete it all in maybe a half hour a day. It still takes you through a good Bible study and kind of helps to think through what you saw on the teaching DVD. But it's not going to be something that's a big time commitment, even though I love doing those kind of Bible studies. And we certainly love putting those out as well. But this one is designed more to be able to fit into maybe a schedule that doesn't allow for that much time. So you can get them from us at Proverbs31.org when they come out. We'll be selling them in our resource center on our website. And then also, if you go to my website, KarenEeman.com, you can get them, although it just kicks you over to the Proverbs one, so you might as well just go there at first. But they'll be available to, you know, major retailers online like Amazon or in-store, like Barnes & Noble, places like that, Family Christian Stores, all of those great places. So,
all right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Well, thanks so much for being with me today, Karen.
Thank you, Amy. I really, really appreciate it. And it's great to hear, you know, not just an interview, but that somebody actually read the book and it helped them and they're applying that. That just makes my whole day. So thank you.
Very good. You're welcome. And enjoy your lunch.
Okay. Thanks, Amy.
All right. Bye. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Karen. I hope you can tell from our conversation that I so enjoyed it. And I hope you guys don't mind that I shared a couple personal stories with her. I was not trying to boast at all, but just really wanted to encourage her as an author, that her words really did mean a lot to me. And to give you guys some more practical examples of how we can listen to these heart drops and really love the people around us. A couple things that I think we should remember is, first, the heart drops, is those are the things that we need to be listening for as we're thinking about other people and trying to hear the moments that we can capture and then use that to intentionally love the people around us. Thinking about necessary people, how can we love the people very intentionally that are necessary in our lives, and they make our lives run more smoothly, and they do all kinds of services for us that we really couldn't run our lives without, probably. And also how to hug a porcupine and squeeze a skunk. You know, those people in our lives that just are not easy to love. You know, it's easy to love the people that are easy to love, like she said, but the people that are hard to love, we are still called to love. It's part of, really obedience to be able to love those people. They're not excluded from our list of people that we are supposed to love. And all of this, no matter what, it's really going to take some sacrifice. It's going to be a whole mindset shift of taking our eyes off of ourselves and our own problems. You know, it's so easy to go down a big rabbit hole in a rabbit trail and talking and thinking all the time about our own problems. And yet, if we could just shift our mind to thinking about how to bless other people and how to love them very intentionally. Also, I mean, it's really going to take, you know, this is a sacrifice. It's going to be probably a sacrifice of time and money and pride sometimes, but it's part of our obedience. And really, guys, the joy is so worth it. When you see, when people feel loved and when they have been noticed, it's so much joy on both of your parts when somebody has been loved through you. So guys, I so appreciate your time listening this week. Don't forget to share it over on Facebook. And I guess that's it for this week. So you guys, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week on Feathers.